former President Donald Trump coming to town. Before he did that, it was Mr. Trump goes to Washington.
First time since, I believe, the January 6th.
Well, first time he's actually been on Capitol Hill
yeah.
since then. Yes, and he was welcomed with open arms. By the way, today's his 78th birthday. They had a little pre-birthday party celebration for him with House Republicans. They had a cake with a 45 and a 47 there.
They didn't have Stevie Wonder there?
They didn't.
Singing happy birthday?
Happy birthday? I'm sure they would have arranged for it if they could have. But, you know, he's in an interesting place right now where he has tossed out two policy proposals, radical policy proposals in terms of radical reforms, where we haven't had a lot of meat and bones about how he was going to do it or how he was going to pay for it. He remembered to the Nevada workers said, well, I want to make tips tax-free.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want you taxed on your tip income. Now, theoretically, there's a good debate to be had about why treat different kinds of income differently. We all make income in different ways. Shouldn't, if we're going to be fair about the system, we all want a fair system. Shouldn't we tax things? Now, maybe not at the same rate. I don't know.
Yeah.
But then he came up with this yesterday, that he wants to eliminate the individual income tax and put in a tariff-based tax that you would replace it with taxing foreign goods coming into this country.
Well, he's taking us back way back.
That's how we did it back in the 1700s, right? That was the main revenue source at the time. So, but again, how much are you going to have to increase tariffs? And how will that, you know, you're going to see more money in your paycheck because you're not going to have the withholding, right? But how much are you going to see prices go up? And are you going to know you're paying the tax? Because, you know, there's foreign elements to almost everything we buy, whether it's the shirt you're on, the car you buy with different components. Ryan Schmelz. Joining us live, watching over all of this happening on Capitol Hill. Ryan, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good, Ryan. What stood out from the meeting with the former president and the GOP lawmakers, other than the fact that he, you know, trashed Milwaukee?
Yeah, well, it's funny you say that because, you know, someone asked that earlier, and I kind of just said, well, you know, the challenging thing with covering former President Trump whenever he does an appearance like this is, you know, we're talking about several hours worth of closed door meetings, and they involve House Republicans and Senate Republicans. And there's so much news that gets made with somebody like former President Trump, where, you know, you could cover tariffs, you could cover Republican unity, you could cover the comments that allegedly were made about Milwaukee. So and you could cover the fact that he endorsed Governor Larry Hogan yesterday.
Spin the wheel,
right?
Yeah, I've been telling people just pick a topic and we'll run with that. Come on.
All right, then I'll pick a topic. How about Republican unity? How did it go with Mitch McConnell, who had been a critic, who his tweet wasn't that, you know, positive for Trump, but now they're face to face?
Right. And from what I understand is that they were sitting right by each other during this meeting. McConnell seemed very enthusiastic when he was leaving the meeting later in the day. McConnell probably got something that he really wanted when former President Trump decided to endorse to Aisha Hosni, Governor Larry Hogan, later on in the day, even though Hogan rejected the endorsement a little bit later on. But, you know, I think McConnell was very excited to see the positivity that was coming out of there. Trump says that he shook hands with McConnell several times. So it seemed like that relationship at least is now moving in the right direction, despite the fact that it's been very rocky ever since January 6th.
Well, the Hogan thing was interesting because he buried the hatchet with a man who is an avowed opponent of much of what he says, showing that he has the self-awareness that he needs a Republican Senate and he needs a Republican to win in a blue state and is willing to put aside grievances for it. That's something we haven't seen a lot from him. As a Republican, I would imagine a lot of folks find that welcoming.
Yeah, and he's buried the hatchet with a number of Republicans. You know, he's done it with Tom Emmer, who's the number three House Republican right now, where, you know, Trump vehemently opposed him becoming Speaker of the House because of his vote when it came to the 2020 election results. And now Trump is stumping for Emmer, and Emmer's been stumping for Trump. So that's one of the relationships that's been repaired. You know, the Hogan thing is interesting because, you know, while Trump did endorse Hogan, Hogan has now rejected that endorsement. And I'm curious to see how Trump is going to respond to Hogan rejecting his endorsement, and to see if all this, this you know, friendliness that's been going on in the last 24 hours is going to be for nothing or not.
Well, there may be implications here in Michigan, which is a blue and purple state, that if someone who isn't totally MAGA ends up being the Republican nominee, that Trump won't scuttle that. Very quickly, we know he spoke to business leaders. He brought up the elimination of income taxes on tips. Supposedly, CEOs kind of chuckled at that, but this idea of going to a tariff-based revenue model and getting rid of the income tax, anybody taking that seriously? It's kind of, let's just throw it against the wall and see if it sticks. Is it sticking?
Well, it seems like at least people are open to it on the Republican side. You know, it would be the idea of using tariffs to offset the revenue losses for income taxes. I don't know what the specific number would be for how much you would like to cut income taxes and how much revenue these tariffs could bring in, but it certainly is something that was widely talked about, at least in the early hours after the meeting came to an end. And then obviously those Milwaukee comments got leaked out, and next you know, we're not really talking about tariffs anymore.
You know, and Ryan, I understand that the former president focused on some issues like inflation and abortion. What did the lawmakers think about that, especially those who may have a differing view on these topics?
Well, I think that for the swing district Republicans, they really like what Trump had to say on the abortion issue, which is for, at least on the House side, from what we understand, he said to follow your heart and vote your conscience on this issue. And I think a lot of Republicans were very happy about that. And then it got, I think, a little more interesting when he was in the Senate meeting, and he flat out said that he did not feel that it was his fault or Mitch McConnell's fault that Republicans had a disappointing election day during the most recent election cycle, because he believes that abortion was the big reason why Republicans lost the last election cycle and weren't able to take back the Senate. So to see him really go gung-ho against this abortion issue based off of these closed-door meetings, I think was really interesting.
But he was the first one who says that I got rid of Roe versus Wade.
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah, no. And I think his argument is that, well, I returned this power to the states, which is how it always should have been. But he has not been hesitant to criticize some of the states that have gone very far when it comes to their abortion restriction laws. And he thinks that this is still something that should be a states' rights issue. But he has cautioned against going so far as to ban, in some cases, exceptions for abortion. So, you know, I think he's trying to find that fine line of taking credit for, you know, the justices he put on the Supreme Court and restoring and removing Roe v. Wade, returning that power to the states, but also still being critical of laws that he thinks goes too far.
Ryan, we just have to rely on other people and what they're saying, but we're told that Taylor Swift was also brought up.
Yes, and I did have a congressman confirm that to me. From my idea of what the context of those comments was, that former President Trump says that he signed legislation while he was president that helped the songwriters, including Taylor Swift, and he was disappointing Taylor Swift is not supporting him because he believes his legislation was very beneficial to her, her profits, and her career.
Has she really said who she supports? She hasn't endorsed Biden.
No. She has not.
No.
She hasn't endorsed. Yeah, she has not endorsed officially yet in this election. She's been very, in the past, she has endorsed President Biden. I believe she did so last election cycle. She opposed Marsha Blackburn, who's the Republican from Tennessee, when she ran for the Senate 6 years ago. So she has consistently been supporting Democrats recently, and she's also been a pretty vocal critic of Trump in the past.
All right. Ryan Smiles, Fox News radio correspondent, WJR contributor. Always a pleasure having you here, my friend.
Yeah, I think you were surprised by my Taylor Swift political.
Oh, no, we knew you were down with
always
Taylor.
Always prepared.
Yes. Thanks. Have a good weekend. And coming up, the first week in the Samantha Wall murder trial, we'll talk with Todd Flood, who will be here in studio at 7:49.
Time now for Auto Views with Jamie Butters, brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Learn more at michiganbusiness.org.
If it seems like attitudes around electric vehicles have taken a downturn, you're right. Even EV owners are souring on the technology. In a consumer survey released this week by McKinsey & Company, 46% of EV owners in the U.S. said they wanted their next vehicle to be gasoline-powered. It was a shocking result, since past surveys had shown that EV buyers remained super loyal to the powertrain. So, what went wrong? Some may have found that the EV lifestyle required too many compromises and created too much stress in the perpetual quest for working public chargers. But it's important to keep in mind that last year, Tesla, still the dominant player in the US EV market, slashed its new vehicle prices by about a third, drastically reducing the resale value of every used EV on the road. That kind of disruption may not ever happen again, but for now, it's turning some EV adopters into EV rejectors. With this week's Automotive View, I'm Jamie Butters, host of the Daily Drive podcast and executive editor of Automotive News.